Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, this is Hannah. I've got a little prologue to this week's episode. We had a tiny little tech mess up about 35 minutes into this episode where one of the microphones failed. So we deal with it really quickly and it's fine, but it just goes a little bit quiet for a few seconds. So when that happens, know that it's all going to get back on track again just a few seconds after. So enjoy. Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Keith Cheggers podcast. I'm Hannah Norris and I'm here with my husband.
Hello.
That's Carl Donnelly.
Hello.
He's my husband. And this is a podcast about pregnancy because that's what's happening to me right now in my body. I am pregnant. I've almost got to the point where I can say that without laughing and feeling weird about it. And I'm currently at week 12 in my pregnancy. So we're charting every week throughout this whole adventure, journey, thing. And
catastrophe.
Hey.
I'm joking.
Miracle.
Planned. Excited. I just like pretending that it's terrifying.
Which it kind of is still as well.
Not yet.
A bit though.
I've not had any panics yet.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Even that mini chat we were just having before we introduced our guest with her partner.
Oh, I mean, about what's to come. I've heard about other people's panicked moments, but as yet, none of them have seeped through to me.
Yeah, because we are here with a guest today. She's a musician. She's a violinist who I know from when she plays with a group called the Demon Strings, who have played with Blur and Gorillaz and The Good, the Bad and the Queen, which is when we met. And toured with Mark Ronson as well. And has been telling us about a crazy gig that she's doing at the moment every night or 6 nights a week near Liverpool Street Station. And her name is Antonia Pagalatos. Hello.
Hello, Hannah.
Hello. Hi. Or Nan. As,
my nickname.
Yeah. Where's that come from?
Oh, I think my brother, we all had funny nicknames growing up. Mm. John was called Bertha, you know, Michael was Menaline. We all had weird.
And Menaline.
Mine was Menaline, yeah, little man.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And yeah, mine was Nan.
As we were driving up here, we drove down a road called Carl Lyon Road. And because that's Carl.
Yes.
I was like, maybe if we had a son, we'd call him Carl Lyon.
I like the sound of that. Yeah. What were the names we were talking about last night? We started talking about weird Greek classical
like
names.
And
oh, you said Hector.
Oh, nice.
I like Hector. But you thought he was a bad guy in history. And
yeah.
I said he was actually a very good warrior.
It was Eric
which
Banner.
Which is not how, yeah, Eric Banner in the film Troy is what it's. Were you thinking about?
Yeah, you're going to get to that, aren't you? Trying to agree on names.
That's right, because you've got a daughter.
Yes.
How old is she?
She's 7.
7. And I remember that because we were on tour together earlier this year. I remember you saying it took a while for you to name her, right?
Yeah, it did. We couldn't agree.
Yeah.
Paul and I, that's my partner.
Yeah.
We just couldn't agree. You know, everything he liked, I didn't like.
What were some of the ones that he liked?
Oh, I think he liked Chloe. I remember that as being one of them. And I went to school with someone called Chloe who was always really mean.
So
I couldn't disassociate.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked things like Elvis.
Yes.
For a girl, I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Even for a boy, I was like Elvis. And I liked Spartacus, but obviously that's a bit crazy because I love the film. And the music of the film is one of my favourite pieces of music ever written. So I was like, what about Spartacus, darling? And he was like, no, not Spartacus, not Elvis. And so, yeah, she was born and we still didn't have a name. We still couldn't agree. And my family were coming over and they were going, oh, you're both musicians. What about Melody? And we were like, no, that's not going to happen. But, you know, it is quite a cute name, but no, that was a bit.
So what did what were you calling her to start off with then?
We didn't have a name. It was just, so on all the the forms that you have, it's always like baby something. It was his surname because we're not married.
Yeah.
Not, you know, out of choice. I just can't face the ceremony, yeah, and the wedding. And because we've been working as musicians at weddings for so long, yeah, the actual thought of us actually being,
yeah,
you know, not the musicians is too weird. So we've been engaged for, I don't know, about 14 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So on all the paperwork that we were getting, it was just called Baby Murray because that's his surname. So yeah, we just carried on calling her Baby Murray. And, yeah, you know.
And how long then? What point did
I think it was about 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
It was about 3 weeks. Without a name. It was, I think, I can't remember what you get. I don't know if it's 40 days. I could be wrong. I can't remember
right,
exactly.
So
but
kind
you
of deadline
do
you
get
have
time.
To.
And I've actually got another colleague at work, lovely guitarist, who was just having the same thing with his wife. They just couldn't agree.
What
you
happens
know?
If you miss the deadline? You just haven't come up with a name?
You have to. You have to.
Are you just anything?
You have to register. Yeah, legally.
Wow.
And go right, you know, official birth certificate, and they write that down.
I wonder if like cyclones, how they get a different name for every cyclone. They just got one that they chuck out there.
Oh, well,
it goes to the alphabet.
Oh,
like Cyclone
like
Denise,
backup,
Cyclone
name.
Edgar.
Yeah.
You haven't done it. You get like.
You just get given.
It's Francine. This is the name.
the lost property name.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Oh no.
Yeah.
I saw Carl's quite obsessed with the name Gary.
I am obsessed with it. Well, not obsessed, just it died out. So the last few years, there's not been any Garys registered in the UK.
Ah, and I just read the other day, there was only two Nigels last year.
Oh my goodness, that's interesting.
So part of me feels like we should try and rejuvenate the name.
Which yeah, I think, as a girl's name, this is Gary, like Elvis.
Yes, I like names like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that could be a girl or a boy. I know it's confusing for people when they go to school and they're reading it and they're not quite sure, but... You know, I quite like.
Yeah,
they can get over that.
Definitely.
Yeah, we're not going to call.
But if it was
her
a girl called
Gary,
Gary. I think everyone would presume it's short for like Gary's Melder or something.
Yeah, that's
you know
true.
I mean?
Yeah,
I think people assume
it'll be a short
Gary
Cart, Gabriella.
Yeah, so I mean that is something we do secretly think about a bit.
Yeah,
names, but
I have
the panic.
A couple, but we're not going to share them.
No,
yet.
No.
I have that panic of like, if you name something and then go, oh fuck, I hate it, but that's it. That's the name now. It's done.
I suppose you can change it though, can't you? You can change it.
And they can change it too. My dad said yesterday that Clive James, his real name was Vivian, and he changed it himself.
Oh, I love that.
Clive.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Mm. And also, yeah, Clive, why would you change it to Clive?
I like the idea because I don't have a middle name. Me and my brother weren't given middle names for some reason. My parents just gave us, right, that's your lot.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of giving kids a couple of middle names so they get a bit of a choice.
To change
if they
it.
Just go, oh, I'll just use that one instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I quite like that idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the royals.
Yes.
That's six names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just give them the options.
We found out this week that... So this week we had a scan because it's week 12. So we had the proper ultrasound where we... saw the baby moving around, kicking its legs, moving its arms. It's 7 centimeters long at the moment from head to rump.
Yeah.
So the legs don't count. That was really cool, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. I didn't realize it would be so much of a baby.
A formed,
yeah, it
yeah.
looks like a baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we did, because I said to you, we did IVF. So we had two little scans at week 7 and 8, which is them just checking the heartbeat before they discharge you to say that everything's going okay. But doing the actual ultrasound was amazing. But also through that, because then we were in a different part of the hospital service, they changed my due date. Like, she's like, I'm going to go and check on the wheel. When did you have the eggs retrieved? When were they put back in? So originally my due date was the 16th of June. And then when we were discharged, they changed it to the 17th of June. And then... seeing the hospital the other day, they changed it to the 19th of June. So it keeps, I mean, it's all around the same time.
Mm.
Yeah.
But we looked up who was born on the 19th of June and Boris Johnson.
Oh,
it
was Boris Johnson.
No way.
Yeah.
No.
Unbelievable. And we should probably point out today we're recording this on the day after the general election. Boris Johnson has become, with a massive majority, the leader of the country.
Mm. So I think I mentioned it because I reckon he's got a lot of middle names.
Oh, I reckon. posh people have so many
I'm
names.
I'm not going to say what I think they could be.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, hopefully...
Spartacuntus.
Hopefully this child is... Hopefully young Gary will come out a day late or early.
Gary Boris.
Oh, no. Just so that we don't have to... It doesn't have to share a birthday.
And yeah, in that scan, we also, that was when we got the opportunity to check for, they're like, do you want to do the Down syndrome check?
Yes.
Check if there's any, check for Down syndrome. And they showed, so I think it's a thing in the spinal fluid where they measure that. And ours was, I think, 2 millimeters or something like that. And I think it was if it was over 3.8, then that's when there's a possibility of Down syndrome. And then you do a blood test as well. And that's something I'd totally been aware of. So at the moment, from the scan, it doesn't show like there's any signs of that. But being an older pregnant woman, I know that that's something that is a higher possibility. But you hadn't thought about that at all, had you,
Carl? No, I'm like sort of blissfully optimistic.
Nice place to be.
Well, yeah, I just never I don't really, I've not really considered any complications as yet. I suppose it's like I said about when we were doing IVF, I was convinced from such an early stage that it was just all going to go really easy and work. Like, even though the percentage of the chance of success is actually not as high as people think, IVF is still like,
it's down like in the 40%.
It's not even that. I think it's in the late 20% or something. And so the chances are against you. For some reason, just from really early on, I was just so convinced. I was like, it feels like it's just, I don't know, it's something in my waters. Yeah. I could tell it was just going to work.
Yeah.
And again, so I've not really at any point had any pause for concern about any difficulties, even though I'm merely here on a support capacity.
You're going to be a great influence then.
I'm very calm about it. I feel very calm about it. I feel like it's sort of, I don't know, there's something in the air. I can feel it all working out.
But you didn't have a 12-week scan, did you?
I didn't have a 12-week scan. It's so embarrassing.
Didn't have a 12-week scan.
So I just, my first kind of thought of the possibility of maybe, so just going back a little bit, I just, I've always been putting work first.
Yeah, me too.
Which I don't know why it is, because I enjoy my work. I think that's why it is. Yeah. And, you know, another thing would come up and that would just take so much time. It might take 6 months, it might take a year. And then we were away, we were in America and there was another musician there. And I bumped into him by chance. I hadn't seen him for 10 years. And he was like, Nan, are you thinking about having kids with Paul? And I was like, of course, you know. And I think I was 36 at the time. Maybe I was 35. Anyway, he said, just word of warning. It took Sue and I, his wife was a musician as well, 9 years to conceive.
Mm.
So get on it, you know. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, I just kind of just presumed that when I was ready, then it would happen.
It always
is so silly.
For me, it's like, it always seemed, I'd be like, yeah, I'd like to in the future, but the future, the older I got, the future didn't get any closer.
Yeah.
It was like, it was still in the future.
In the future. Yeah. Yeah. And that thing of like being ready, you know, it didn't happen. I wasn't ready. I never felt ready, never felt settled in myself and always wanted to, I don't know, achieve more or, you know, somehow prove to myself that I was valid or something.
Yeah.
So it was really, he was the catalyst, really, of me going, right, Paul, I think we've got to not be careful anymore.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't a kind of like, right, let's do it. It was just like, let's not be careful.
Yeah, just open to make it a possibility.
Make it a possibility. Yeah. And I remember being in a hotel room in Poland and I was really drunk, actually. We'd been downing like neat vodka and we'd had such a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just crazy. And I remember being in the hotel room and my breasts were hurting. Yeah. And I was thinking, God, this, and my breasts are really hurting and my jeans are really tight. this is really weird. And I never wrote down when my periods were. They just happened regularly and I just thought, oh, this is annoying. And
yeah.
but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a thing on my mind. So I just kind of sat in this hotel room thinking, my goodness, like this, I just don't feel right. And I think I might have missed a period,
yeah,
you know. So I came home and rather than going to the shop and buying a test, I just rang the doctors and I was like, I want to come and see a doctor because, you know, I don't know why. I just wanted to do it that way. So I went to the doctors.
How long after you'd felt your weird boobs?
It was as soon as I got back.
Like,
so
a couple of days?
Yeah, or? It was like we'd travel back the next day.
Okay.
And then, you know, the next day I went into the doctors and they were like, we've got an appointment this afternoon, come and see me. And I went on my own. Paul was like, you know, in his studio carrying on his work.
Had you mentioned it to him yet?
I had mentioned to him, yeah. He knew I was going down there.
Yeah.
And, the doctor just, you know, I think I did a wee and, you know, they felt around and said, you are quite heavily pregnant now. And I was like, oh, all right. Not just, you know, oh my goodness, you know. And then I just didn't feel prepared because it wasn't something that I was prepared for.
How pregnant were you?
Well, she wasn't sure. She'd made an appointment at the hospital, like, immediately. I think it was, like, the next day. And I was, like, a few days short of 16 weeks.
Whoa. I'm convinced it's because of the world we, like, inhabit. You know, I'm a comedian. Hannah's an actor. Has worked in music and theatre. And, like, we work with creative, quite sort of, you know, people that don't live a normal life.
Mm.
But so many people we know have found out they're pregnant after getting shit-faced.
Like
they've just been out on like a bender and then something feels, and then they find out and they're like, oh, like I'm sure it's, I don't know if it's because our lives aren't as regulated or I think we could, you know, creative people can get a bit sidetracked from noticing things because you're on the road.
It just sounds, it sounds really ridiculous because you think, god, that's quite a long time not to have a period, but sometimes it's just, I don't know, things, it seems like you're in some kind of, like, I don't know, not suction thing, but you're just in some vacuum that you're just trying to produce and just get
and
through
being
everything.
On tour as well, being in different countries,
it's like a bubble.
Abnormal.
It is a bubble. Yeah. Yeah, touring is definitely a bubble. You don't sort of feel normal anyway.
No,
so I think
you don't know what day of the week it is.
Yeah.
You know where you're going next. You know what?
Couldn't believe when, because we were on tour in Europe, that kind of bus lag feeling. It was the first time I'd been on a tour bus. And when we get to a hotel, I'd be knocked out for a couple of hours and wake up and go, fuck, that feels like I've just flown across the world from that thing of just being on the bus overnight and whatever that you're sleeping. But if you're not properly sleeping or whatever.
Yeah.
But that was, like, for me, the first trimester, which I've just come out of, so I'm starting to feel more normal is what it feels like, feel more normal. I was so tired, so tired.
Mm.
But you didn't feel abnormally tired.
I didn't feel any different at all.
Mm.
Nothing. Just, I think I was aware that my jeans were tight.
Yeah.
But I just thought I was eating too much.
Yeah, which is another thing, because I'm definitely at that point now where I'm trying to decide if I'm showing a little bit or not, or if, but it's that thing of going, I could just look a bit fat.
Mm.
I've just eaten a bit of pizza, like a load of pizza.
A lot
of pizza.
Yeah.
And that's so then when you did find out, you didn't feel prepared.
I went straight into Paul's room and said, this is what's happened. And I'm like, really not ready. And he was like, darling, there's going to be another tour and another one and another one. And there's always going to be another tour. You know, this is now. And I was like, oh my goodness. Okay. You know, and then started making calls and tell my family and, you know, just the shock of it all. And then really embraced it, you know, really just went, wow, this is really happening. And was, I don't know if I was prepared as such, but, you know, realised that this was happening.
Yeah, I think that was a main thing for me with starting this podcast was the moment that I found out, I was like, I don't know anything. Mm. I found out 4 weeks and like we're in a process with the hospital system, but still like, what the fuck? Like what happens now? You get a baby in a while, but what happens in the meantime?
And,
and what's it like? And what do you have to think about? Because I haven't been around babies that much either. Like I don't have them in my life particularly.
Yeah.
So there's no kind of direct experience in that way. Did you have any of that? Like were you used to being around kids?
No, not at all. I had no idea, you know, what to expect. And it was, I just did it naturally, you know, like from reading things or being on the internet, looking things up if I wanted to know something or just make, you know, do my appointments, ask the questions I needed to ask and just carry on.
Yeah.
Just carried on working, basically.
And you worked throughout your pregnancy? Were you touring or what did you...
Not well, yes. Not as much. I was still going away, but not on long stints. But yeah. I was still going, and I hadn't told there were people. You know, I told you know, Demon Strings knew about it, yeah. But I remember we'd been booked for a. Am I allowed to talk about work?
Yeah, I suppose.
We've been booked for a show for Mark Ronson in Paris, and it was a catwalk show for ETAM, mm-hmm. And the guests he had on were insane. He had Grace Jones, Gloria Gaynor, the Pointer Sisters, Sister Sledge, Chaka Khan. You know, it was like insane. You know, you wanted to do this gig, right? You really didn't want to miss out, but we had to. Wears particular outfits because it was a catwalk, be it, you know, mid catwalk, sitting down two and two in kind of platform heels and particular outfits. And I hadn't said to them, like, I think I was about 6 months pregnant then. So I was really showing, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, we managed to tell the costume department that I was pregnant and they, you know, made sure I was wearing something that wasn't going to constrain me in any way.
Yeah.
And not platforms. Platform shoes, but I remember sitting in the catering and Mark came in and I was like, I've got something to tell you, you know. And I said, I'm pregnant. And he was like, I know. I can see that, you know. And I just, you know, I just, because I was wearing baggy black jumpers, I just thought, you know, I could hide it a little bit and not be so, you know. But so I did basically carry on as normal as much as I could on stage, just being really big.
Yeah. Mm. So we had a friend that we spoke to, Wendy Wason, a few weeks ago. She's got three children, and when she was pregnant with her third, she was performing at the Edinburgh Fringe and she was doing two shows a day when she was
eight months.
And being kind of at 11 p.m. and doing a show and being fully pregnant, and she was like, oh, it was crazy, but it was because it was my third kid, I felt like I could
do it.
I knew what was happening, and it was not as much of a big deal, and now that there was once when she was playing a song that used to be the intro music, and that he, when he was a baby, he went crazy because he could hear this song again that he knew every night from going on stage, which is funny.
That's but, one thing being self-employed, that you don't have the support. And I think when you are employed, you know, you have this maternity leave, and it's kind of a given. Now you tell your employer that you're pregnant and they say, great, you know, this is when you're going to work up until, and then you're going to relax for however long, and then you're going to come back then.
Mm. But, and you know, this is
something
well.
That is not advised by, you know, by the doctors or the maternity. They can't give you that advice. That's all stuff that you have to search for online and work out how you want to do it. Mm. And I just took everything, I just, as normal. I didn't go, right, I'm going to give myself this long. I worked right until, I don't know, 2 days before I started.
Going into labour.
Wow. Yeah.
And then how soon after did you start working again?
I think it was 3 weeks or something. Shit. I was like limping. A little bit,
because
it was so painful. You know, I kind of had this limp because one of my legs went completely numb.
Yeah.
From the pain of childbirth, and it was like, you know, walking through Amsterdam limping, like being in toilets in some club. You know, like
bleeding.
Extracting, because you know. It was, you know, my breasts were producing so much milk. I was just, you know, I can, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, all these girls like coming in to check themselves out. And I'm like, you know, but I didn't prepare. I think I would if it happens again, with hindsight, I would have gone, right, I'm going to take off, you know, 2 months or something, or 3 months or something like that. But, I didn't.
But again, it's part of that mindset of work being so important, being something that you love.
Exactly.
That if you do take that time out, then how quickly are you going to disappear, or is the next thing not going to happen?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It's really...
Yeah, like this is an opportunity and I really want to take this opportunity. Yeah. And
I'm not going to let this stop me.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll be gone. Sorry, darling, I'm going to be gone 4 or 5 days and it won't be long and I'll be back. And then, you know, doing stuff.
And did you take her with you?
No. Right. No. Not... for that one, but there was somewhere I could take her with me,
yeah,
which, you know, I'm so grateful that I could and that she could be around and, you know, just depending on whether it was feasible for her to travel and whether Paul could come and take the time to look after her. And he knew, you know, something's really important like, to me musically. And it was never about, you know, earning money. It was about doing something that I really wanted to do, you know, and be involved in. And that's a moment that's gone forever. And, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
With a project that might have arisen, probably.
And I guess that, I mean, that's something with you, the fact that, I mean, Carl gigs usually 5 or 6 nights a week, and some of them are out of London, like probably a couple of times a week. Sometimes you stay overnight, sometimes you're just out of town for the gig. But, yeah, how that would be different if that was my life, doing that many nights a week. Like, you know, I go on tour sometimes with different things, if that's doing a show or... like the assisting that I did with the Good, the Bad and the Queen. But that, I mean, if you were going, it would be hard for you if you were the mother.
Yeah. And even then, I don't know what the etiquette is as a dad who's self-employed and touring and stuff. Like, you know, again, like you say, like if you're self-employed, you don't have maternity, paternity leave. Mm. There's no rules on how long should I take. Mm. And then weirdly, because I was thinking, because, you know, they reckon now more and more people are self-employed than ever, because the way the economy's changed and work's changed, they're going to have to at some point look at, you know, giving some self-employed people some help in that. But yeah, I don't. I've already my diary is booked up about 9 months to a year in advance. So at the minute, I've got gigs. You know, I've left sort of June relatively clear, but there's still definitely gigs that are in and around the due date that I've sort of...
I think you've got gigs in at the London Comedy Store on the 20th, 21st, 22nd.
I mean... but yes, I have got gigs that weekend, but they went in before
before we started.
So that, again, it's that thing of, I
can
don't know...
Can you dep gigs out like musicians can? Can you...
On what, short notice?
Well, yeah. Can you dep them out? Can you go... Hello, Gary, can you dep this for me?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely with a club gig, yes. Like if it's, say, the Comedy Store in London, you know, it's a big enough club and, like, they've got enough comics who want to play it that they could, you know, and I get on well enough with them that I could say to them, look, this is what's happening. Mm. You know, my wife might be giving birth that week. If that's the case, I'll probably have to drop out short notice. And I think they'll be cool to, like, wait and just... give me a bit of like time, because imagine you were 2 weeks premature
or late.
Then, you know, I'll do the Comedy Store. You know, but I know, you know what I mean? I think I'm going to sort of play it by ear. But
something like that with the sort of bigger gigs, they would find the comedian to substitute you, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Smaller things, you might go, I can't do it, but I asked around.
But if it's something, or if it's a festival or something, you know, I'd have to definitely cancel it enough in advance. And just they'd work something else out, but it's like, again, I've, at the minute I've just thought, we don't know what's going to happen. I'll just load it up and then take things out if and when they're needed.
My name's Pete Allison.
And I'm Dave Cribb, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends.
Each week we invite a guest on, ask them to pick their favourite episode of Friends, and then we talk about it in far too much detail.
Basically, if you like the show Friends, and you like it when people take things far too seriously, then you might well like this podcast. Search Great Big Owl on your podcast app of choice, and you'll find Friends with Friends right there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Just talking about where that you're wearing big jumpers and things like that, because you've got beautiful clothes. You wear beautiful clothes. You do. You have amazing, cool clothes. When we're on tour, you'd get off the bus and I'd be wearing, like, I don't know, tracksuit pants and something, and you'd have this amazing these shorts and kind of some vintage, beautiful top, and I'd be like, oh, look at her, she looks amazing.
Thank you.
But yeah, it's my birthday party on the weekend, and we went looking for. I'd got a dress online, but I didn't like it, and then we went looking for some dresses, and I bought a couple that are almost quite 70s maternity vibe. Yeah. Like, they're sort of flowing, but they feel good and comfortable. And
I described them as Rosemary's Baby dresses. So, you know, that sort of
New York
70s
yes.
bohemian sort of look.
Very
yeah.
nice.
Which some other, you know, again, putting some other ones on, just going, I've been going, do I just look a bit fat in this? Like, it's not obviously a baby. I love those people who wear tight clothes and they've got the obvious bump.
Yes.
Just like, here I am with my
yes.
with my baby here. But I was thinking about that with you, with clothes and how you, like throughout your pregnancy, what?
Oh, I think I didn't really, I remember buying this really cool kit from Mothercare, I think it was, where it just... There was a black one, a white one, and a blue one, and it was like an attachment for trousers. So as long as you wore something long enough, you could carry on wearing your trousers and not buy. So I didn't buy any maternity trousers at all. I just bought this. It's this bit of fabric that goes, and then it's got, you know, an attachment for each side of your trousers.
Yeah.
So you could carry on wearing all your clothes, but just not do them up, basically.
Yeah.
And this fabric. So as long as you wore something long enough, so I just made sure that anything I wore with my trousers or leggings or whatever I wanted to wear was long,
yeah.
you know. And then I think I did spend, and this sounds horrible, but I did spend a lot of time in a big black jumper,
yeah.
because it was the one that didn't present so much that I was pregnant. I wasn't one of those girls that,
yeah.
Or ladies or whatever, that wanted to show off my lady bump or whatever the song was.
Yeah. Lumps. Lady
yeah, I wanted to be just discreet. That's the way I did it. And just wore black.
Yeah.
I think. And yeah. Yeah.
Carl bought me some maternity trousers for my birthday.
Oh.
So I put all my jeans away because quite early I was like, oh, these feel too tight already. Just try to do them up, but I didn't know about that. I'm going to go and look at those.
Yeah,
extender
get
things.
The jeans out the cupboard.
Yeah, get
yeah,
get back up on top of the cupboard to get the jeans
yeah.
back out of the cupboard.
And they had some kind of I don't know. It was like kind of, I don't know how to call it. Like, not a bag. It was a support. It
yeah.
was a support, and it was like a very wide belt that you could wear so that you felt supported.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably what maternity clothes do.
Yeah.
Even though they're quite loose, there are some, especially the trousers, that have this big kind of like massive wide band,
yeah.
which is supportive.
Yeah.
And
so
I don't
good
think
for your
it's
lower back, I imagine.
Yeah, I don't
yeah.
think it's
a, like a
it's a
belt.
Wide band, because suddenly you've got a wide waist. I think it's supportive. And so I bought this, which I wore underneath to support the weight of
yeah, right.
of what was going on. I think that I remember that, having that.
Yeah.
To look for that.
Yeah. So I'm making a list every time I talk to someone. I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, is that thing?
Well, yeah, it's not none of the things that you ever like look up online.
Yeah.
Actually,
let me look at this.
That's not the lead. There's no definitive list.
No.
What you find is everyone we know who's been pregnant that you talk to gives you a new little tip that
yeah.
you didn't find out anywhere else.
Yeah.
Well, are they nice maternity trousers? Are they ones that
yeah,
you...
Yeah, yeah, they're cool kind of animal print ones.
Yeah.
They're good. But they're definitely like, I haven't tried them on yet. I saw that like there's space for a baby in them.
Wow.
might
I
be
thought
a bit
it would
too
be,
big.
It was almost a novelty present at this stage.
Yeah.
It's so early to buy
yeah.
maternity trousers.
Yeah.
But I thought it'd be funny.
My mum sent us our first bit of baby clothing as well.
Aww.
Little singlet t-shirt that just yeah. says Melbourne, which is yes. sweet, because she hasn't, like, until we did this show together this year, we'd never really talked about kids and her being it will be her first grandchild. But now she's really into it now. Once we talked about it, she just talked about it all the time.
Yay. Excellent.
But yeah, I saw my acupuncturist this week, and she was saying how with like, because I was saying about showing and stuff, she said, well, you're like already your ribs will be starting to move outwards to start starting to create space, and that idea that I'm feeling a bit thicker as well. She's like, well, yeah, your body moves before it need, like before it needs to, so it creates the space that then the baby can grow into, rather than it trying to push its way past your lungs or whatever, whatever it has to do. And with that as well, she was like, you should go and get yourself a maternity bra. I was like, but she said for in the January sales that I should go and do that, because the underwire, as your boobs start to grow, the underwire can start to like poke in, and in terms of then when you're getting breast milk or whatever, sort of some of those tubes or vessels or whatever is going on inside, it can restrict or like cut off, do some early damage to that. So I have to get a maternity bra.
I'll add it to 2020. The Christmas list. I'll have a word with Santa Claus.
Yuck, in a stocking. Just a big old bra at the bottom of it. Another thing we were we started to touch on before we started recording, was a little bit about birth. Now, when we had the ultrasound, then we did a blood test in this separate part of the of Queen Charlotte's Hospital, and there were some photos there of the birth centre, and it said you could go and have a tour on the first Monday or the first or third Sunday of every month. So we've seen that we can go in January, and there's a picture and it looks like a hotel, like a nice double bed, and there's kind of a big bath, a birthing pool sort of thing. And you
didn't
could
that.
Have had that's what you were expecting to have. Is
that's
it?
What, no, you know, you do a birthing plan, and we were at St. Mary's in Paddington, and we went to the birthing centre. And it was beautiful. I mean, it really was. Yeah. You just wanted to move in. It was enormous, and it had this big pool, and it had funny lighting as well. It was like, you know, pink, and yeah, it was just beautiful. And so we were, you know, I'm sure everybody goes there and says, yes, this is where I want this to happen, you know. And that was the plan, but it didn't happen that way.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I wish... You know, in hindsight again, that I'd spoken to more people that had given birth and about their experiences, so I could, you know, find out how this might not happen.
Yeah.
You know, I obviously it's obvious it might not happen, but, you know, just to get different experiences, you know. And I remember being in one of the NCT, it was just one of the classes they did at St. Mary's, and they were saying, you know, there was, oh, it can take, you know, 4 or 5 days, you know, and we were all giggling away like, ha, 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 you know, poor people, you know, not realising that that's a reality.
Yeah.
And that's a reality that happened to me.
Oh.
And I wasn't wise enough to realise that that actually could happen.
Yeah.
And I just assumed, like you are assuming.
Yeah. Thank
you. I just assumed that I was going to be fine
and
it was going to be really easy. And it wasn't.
So, and what happened to you? What is it?
Was there a
thing that caused it to be longer?
I was early.
Yeah.
10 days early, which I wasn't, you know, expecting.
Prepared.
I wasn't prepared for.
Did you have a hospital bag packed?
Yes, we had that packed. Yeah. I was. So you have to bring with you when you give birth. You have to have a little child's car seat.
Yeah,
That's one of the things you have to have. My sister lives up in the Cali Road, and she had one, and she's like, come and get that. And I was like, okay. So it was at 9:30 in the morning, and I was on the Euston underpass with my mum. She was going to come up as well. And so I'm sitting in traffic, and I remember saying to my mum, I'm not feeling right today, mum. I'm not feeling right, you know. And then in the traffic, I had this overwhelming contraction.
Yeah.
And then I just started swearing, going, fuck, I think it's happening now, mum, you know, and I'm in the Euston underpass, you know.
Yeah.
And so, because, well, the only thing I could do really was turn around, because she can only drive an automatic, and I wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, right, I'm going to turn around, I'm going to go home now. And she was like, okay, you know, so. So I think it happened. It was painful, but it was like, okay, this is not normal, this is a contraction, this is happening now.
Yeah.
So I think it was like 20 minutes later or so. there was another one, and I got, but I was in pain,
yeah,
you know, because I think I was shocked and not prepared, that to be early,
yeah,
and so I got to the front door, and rather than getting my keys out, I banged on it.
Yeah, that's too hard.
And I was like, shouting, Paul, Danny, bang, 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 you know. And when I should have just got the keys out and just calmly opened the door. But I was like, it's happening, right, get the stopwatch out.
Yeah.
You know, let's see what the contractions are. And you know, started writing down, like, when they were getting closer and closer. And we rang the hospital, and it was about 7 minutes, every 7 minutes or something. I was like, yeah, okay, this is really going for it now. And they said, just come in to the birthing centre. And I was like, okay, calm, in we go, you know. And got in there, and I was in a lot of pain already, yeah, a lot of pain. And went into the birthing centre, and it was really empty, you know, it wasn't heaving, it was really empty, and they were very calm. To go, we'll examine you. And I'm like, I'm in a lot of pain. And they're like, yeah, whatever. Just chill. Just wait there. You know, you're not giving birth, okay? And I was like, I'm in a lot of pain. Yeah. Please, you know. And I really was. I felt like I couldn't stand, that I had to kneel on the floor, you know, and that's how I felt comfortable.
Yeah, I bet.
So they examined me, and then they were like, you're only 2 centimetres, you could go home.
How many centimetres are you supposed to get to?
I think, I don't
know. Two's a little.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Okay.
7, 10, I don't know.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't two. And I go home. And I was like, well, I can't go home. You know, I don't want to go home.
Yeah.
And they were like, you've got to go home. I'm sorry, you've got to go home. And I was like, okay, I can't believe it. I've got to go home. So I went
sorry,
home.
Can I just turn that mic towards you a bit more?
Yeah, I went home. And they didn't stop.
Yeah.
The contractions didn't stop, and they said, you know, just
sorry, the mic seems to have gone. It seems to have gone off.
The swap.
Yeah, I don't know why that mic's just.
It's a thrilling story. I don't want to.
Yeah, tell it into that mic. I don't know what's happened there.
No.
Keep going. It's a good story. You got it?
Yeah, I'm still.
In fact, my waters had broken before I'd gone. My waters had
after
broken.
The eastern underpass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I was at home before, it was supposed to, you know, first we called the hospital. This is, sorry to be confusing, but I was trying to work out when my waters had broken. And they had broken at home. And that's when they said, come in.
Yeah.
And so I just assumed I was going to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And when they said, you know, you're not ready, you have to go home. What they didn't say to me was, when you come back, you're not allowed into the birthing centre. What they didn't say to me. And which the reason being is when your waters break, your amniotic fluid, which is what protects the baby from infection, is then gone. So you are at risk of being getting an infection. And they can't have infection in the birthing centre because they haven't got the facilities to, you know, for infection to spread.
Yeah.
So they didn't say that. They didn't say, when you come back, you're not going to be coming to this lovely place. You're going to go home, and then you're going to go to the maternity ward and be in the hospital. But I didn't know that at the time. So I came home, even though my waters had broken, and was so in so much pain that I just seized, you know, my body would just kind of clench itself because I just didn't know how to relax because it was so painful. And the next, you know, I had to be at home until the next day. So all night, no sleep at all. Just, you know.
And still like every 7 minutes.
Every 7 minutes, whoa, every 6, 7 minutes. I had about 3 bars. I was just, you know, just thinking, right, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to be, and it, you know, it's not getting any sooner, but, you know. So next morning, phone them, come in. Go to the maternity ward, go upstairs. Right, we're going to admit you into the hospital. I got a bed. There were 6 other ladies.
Birthing women,
all in the same amount of pain as I was.
In the room together?
In the room together. So very little privacy.
Yeah.
The lady at the window, closest to the window, had the gas and air. One thing was, this was now Good Friday. So we've got, you know, the Easter weekend.
Yeah.
And little did I know that there were no staff on Easter weekend because they were all on holiday. I don't know, but they weren't there, that's for sure. So the gas and air, please. No, we've only got one, which is the lady at the window who is screaming in pain, you know. So I'm thinking, oh my God, poor lady. She needs it more than I do, because she's, I think, you know, the dad was kind of like looking to see if it was happening. No staff. So we had to cope with this on our own.
Yeah.
So Paul would come, my mum would come, Paul would come, and they would take breaks. And I was just like, oh my goodness, I need some kind of pain relief. And then a nurse would come, you know, every hour or something. And, you know, and I said, is it gas, something to help me through this? And paracetamol. And I was like, well, that's it, just paracetamol. And there was a lady opposite me who was threatening to sue the hospital.
Yeah.
Because she was in so much pain. She was saying, this isn't right.
Yeah.
You guys have to do something. We're all in excruciating amount of pain and there's no one here to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, and I was begging Paul. I was saying, please take me somewhere else where I can be looked after, because I don't know what's going on. I'm in so much pain and I was just beside myself.
Yeah.
So from what I remember, you could go down to the birthing unit, not the birthing centre, but where, you know, you do get a room on your own, and then they would, you know, they would come up and call somebody at random times. 4 or 5 hours you would have to wait, and then, so it was like waiting for the lottery.
Yeah.
They'd come up and say, right, it's your turn to go down and we're going to assist you, you know, to get this process going. And I think because there was no one there, I couldn't relax, because, you know, there was nobody there.
And that thing as well of being in a room with 5 or 6 other women in the same kind of intense state wouldn't it's not the low level lighting of the birthing center and a water bath to go and sit in for a bit. Like that's all feeding into anxiety and tension, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think I remember I'm sorry to say this, but I remember shitting myself.
I've said I think I'm gonna shit myself.
Right.
I've got that predicted already.
Yeah, for the baby to come
releasing
out.
It
so I shat myself and vomited simultaneously. Which was, I've never done that before.
And in front of a room of people?
Right. Well, you've got curtains. Yeah. You know? And so, but there's nobody there.
Yeah.
You know, so my mum was like, well, you can't lie in a bed of shit.
Yes.
So I'm going to go and find you some clean sheets. Mum, please do. You know, and so she went off and started looking.
And especially not in the 21st century in London, right? Like,
right. Why is she looking for in the cupboards, you know, to find some clean bedding? So, you know, she was basically my nurse.
Yeah.
You know, so she went and found some sheets and, you know.
Wow.
So I think it had, obviously it had something to do with the fact that it was Easter weekend.
Yeah.
And, you know, eventually, I think it was early hours of Sunday morning. So this went on Friday, Saturday, you know. And so it started on Thursday. That's when my waters broke. And then Friday, Saturday was contractions, no birth, just waiting, tensing up, feeling just, I don't know, understand what's going on, exhausted. You know, so late Saturday night, early hours of Sunday morning, they said, they called my name, and I couldn't walk by then. I was exhausted, I had no energy, I was in so much pain, I was beside myself, and I remember this, I couldn't walk. And the nurse was like, get up off the floor. And I was like, what? I can't walk. And she, you know, she was like, get up off the floor. And I was like, please. You know, and my mum went and found her again.
Yeah.
You know, like a nurse, went and found a wheelchair to wheel me into the lift because I couldn't physically move.
Yeah.
And then when I got into the room, oh, wow. You know, amazing. And I had nothing left, no energy at all. When they said, do you want a
epidural?
Epidural.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't do this anymore. I've got no energy left.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember kind of trying to be really cool because the guy, the anaesthetist, was like, he's really cool, you know.
Yeah.
And I wasn't prepared for him to be so cool. I was kind of like sitting up and like, hi. You know, like trying to compose myself, you know, that bit, this guy was cool. And I had to
be a bit impressive.
Just, not behave like a, you know,
animal.
A weak
dick.
So once I had the epidural, that was like, wow, why couldn't this happen have happened 2 days ago? And then I was relaxed. And then, you know, and then I had a few hours sleep.
Yeah.
And then when I woke up, it was like, yeah, no, you're going to give birth now. And I was like, great. And I needed help, you know.
Yeah.
Because I was so exhausted.
Yeah.
And I had the epidural. I did need help.
Yeah.
And it was a fontuse, I think they call it.
I don't know what that is.
No, it's kind of like, I don't know, there must be
another. Is it that vacuum thing?
Yeah.
We help suck it up.
They help. So you push, but they need to, just to help.
Yeah.
Because I had no energy.
Yeah.
And no feeling, really. So the actual giving birth was beautiful
and
easy once I'd actually made it into that room. But the 2 days being in the ward upstairs was unreal. I'd found out when I got home that it was so busy that some people had to give birth at home because that particular weekend, you know, they weren't prepared. So some people had to stay at home because there was no space in the hospital. So they were like, you were actually really lucky that you were admitted into the hospital.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe I was lucky, but no staff.
If you'd been at home, you might have been more relaxed and it might have happened.
Yeah.
You know, there's that you don't know, because I think to me it makes sense that being in that environment would make you more tense and make it harder to kind of release the baby into the world.
I think when, you know, I've been watched, you know, I had watched lots of this One Born Every Minute or whatever it's called, and you see and they've got a room and their husband's there kind of being really annoying. and you know, they're in a room, and that's what I thought. I thought I would go to a room and I would have somebody checking up on me all the time, and that's what I didn't have. I was in a ward, you know, with nobody checking up on me and telling me, you're okay. This is going to be fine.
Yeah.
No reassurance, you know.
Yes, and I read a book a few weeks ago that's called Give Birth Like a Feminist, and it's about, which we don't really like the title, but it's about the way that feminism is not alive in the maternity ward. It's not alive in the birth rooms, that people aren't informed and you don't get to ask for stuff and you're not heard in the same way that you that we like to be, and we've managed to be heard more in the world, but in that environment is still not quite there. So all those things of not being informed about that stuff and not being heard when you say I can't get up off the floor.
That's
not heard. So it's about, this kind of book is about being able to like ask those questions and sort of knowing your rights as well. But then it's good that it was when it finally happened that it went okay.
Amazing.
Is your microphone dead?
No, I do not have a microphone. I feel like that was the powers that be saying no man should be involved in this.
No, yes you can be. I don't know. I think that's really covered the span of pregnancy. Is there any other, like, is there some things, like, you've talked a lot about, well, you've talked a couple of times about hindsight and things that you go, oh, if I'd known that, I would have done that differently. Do you think there are any particular bits of advice or things that you wish you'd known that spring to mind?
I think I would have taken time off.
Yeah.
I think in hindsight, I would have done that. I think that's the main thing, because it's such a special time, you know, and it really changed. It does to some people. Some people it doesn't. They go straight back into work. But, you know, it was like work schmuck after that. You know, that's how I felt. And it was like, why have I been putting this off? Why have I done that? You know, and I regretted that. You know, and yeah, it just put things into a different perspective, and a perspective that I really enjoyed and really, you know, I'm grateful and love.
I think, I mean, I definitely think that's been a big learning for me with all the people that we've spoken to, is that part of it, because like you, like me, like our other guests, what we love what we do, but also knowing it's not the whole world. And then when you are introduced to your new child, that you go, oh yeah, no, it's not the whole world. It isn't, like, that this is this is a beautiful and good thing. And that I was looking at doing some extra work kind of closer up to the time of the birth that I've kind of like, you know, a chunk of three weeks that I'm not doing now from talking to people and going, oh, that seems like the right decision. Like that's definitely the advice that I've been given. And in terms of Carl, he often wants to know if there's anything that I'm talking for you now.
Thank you.
anything that he should know or think about, particularly as being the partner.
To help along the way.
I think you're going to do that naturally. I think women's hormones are very different after they've given birth. I didn't feel that I was quite on this planet, I think, for about 3 months.
Yeah.
I was like buzzing. I think I don't know whatever
adrenaline. Like high.
I don't know what hormone it was. If I could bottle it, I would sell it and take it or buy it, because I was like on this amazing high for about 3 months. It was just this bizarre, and I suppose it's your body going, this is, you've got to do this for your child. And it was a great feeling. So I might not have done things normally in that period of time. I might have behaved in a different way. I don't know. I would have to ask Paul. But, you know, hopefully I wasn't an arsehole and go, darling, you know, can you please get me this? Because, you know, I know mates that have done that, like that are doing, having just had a baby now, and, you know, colleagues that I'm working with that are blokes that are moaning because their wives have just given birth and they're going, can you get me this? Can you get me that? Can you do this? Can you do that? And they're just running around doing it all because they're breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And they think, this is what I'm doing. So you need to do this. You need to get me some tea. You know, and I was explaining to them that they've just done this. Their body is not normal. They won't be doing that forever more, I promise you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that they're just not being normal.
I think, and I've had a little bit, the flip side of that is the way that women can also be very, like, too grateful for them going, thank you for getting me that. And it's like, actually, I can't do it right now. Mm. I'm feeding this child. Mm. So just get it for me. Carl carried my bag around yesterday and I was very grateful.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I kept saying, thank you for carrying my bag.
You're welcome.
Anyway, I think that's about it. It's been amazing to talk to you. Thank you. I'm so glad I thought of you and to get your perspective on this. So thank you very much.
I wish you both the best. This is so exciting.
Yeah, it's cool.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Hello, my darlings. It's me, Anna Mann, actress, singer, welder. Gotta have a backup. I've been in everything, my darlings, and I've been cut from most things. However, I will not be cut from one thing, and that is my own podcast, Talking to Actors with Anna Mann, where I meet those rarest of creatures, the actors. That's Talking to Actors on the Great Big Owl.